Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings from Miami, Florida. This is Ken English. I'm the Blog Talk Radio guy online, but I've been doing a lot more in different forms of online media. I'm going to talk a little bit about that as we unfold not only today's program, but programming in the future. You know, a few years ago, publishing referred to printing books, magazines, and newspapers. Today includes e-books, blogs, and video. Recently, I've begun to focus on marketing with social media, including WordPress and Blogger blogs, microblogs such as Twitter and Cinchcast, podcasting on Blog Talk Radio and other sites, as well as online video. If you visit my website, EnglishPublishing.com, you'll be able to see some of the different applications I've been involved with. You can also access that by KenEnglish.com. And a few others that I've been dabbling with. Over the years, you start to develop different website presence, and you recognize that you need to keep them kind of together, but each one has a slightly different take on it, you know, because that is the progress that we all go through as we plan these things out. But various elements of social media have become much more significant. Audio is extremely important. The Blog Talk Radio platform provides me an opportunity to talk to people in various countries, various places around the world, listening at different times, because it is, in fact, on demand. It's archived when it's being recorded right now, and then it's archived so that people can go back and they can listen to shows that were done from DEMA, the Diving Equipment Marketing Association, in Orlando, Florida, back in November, when I was joined by and went to it with Peter Symes, the publisher of X-Ray Magazine, a digital publication, and you can find that online at xray-mag.com. And Peter and I have been working on a couple different uses for online media. We've certainly are tapping into the Blog Talk Radio platform. A widget for the show is on xray-mag.com right now. You can also find a widget for Cinchcast. And Cinchcast is the newest offering from the Blog Talk Radio people. BlogTalkRadio.com has launched a social media platform that started back in October of 2009, and that is really an audio application for Twitter. You can record a message and then through a couple of clicks place it on and let people know on Facebook and Twitter that you have done an audio report, and they can listen to what you have to say. So you can type a few words, but you can talk a whole lot more. And so if you're unfamiliar with those, certainly the Cinchcast platform, all you really have to do is Google in how to use Cinchcast. And right at the top of the list is a Camtasia video I did on how to use Cinchcast. It's on the Vidler platform, and you'd be able to watch that. I'm actually in the process of upgrading it, or I guess I should say updating it, because there's a lot of changes that take place on the system. A few of the screenshots need to be replaced. But overall, the concept and the application is still very, very useful if you'd like to see how that actually works. And so that's simply by going to Google and typing into the search box, how to use Cinchcast, C-I-N-C-H-C-A-S-T. I also post information about the Blog Talk shows that I'm doing, not only for myself, this one happens to be mine, I call it Liquid Lounge, and it focuses a lot on the international scope of the ocean. The ocean wraps the globe. You hear constantly about how this is a water planet, But what we're not doing is taking very good care of it. The waters are being polluted. The marine life are being killed without concern for the fact that we're going to tip the balance real soon. The Shark Research Institute of sharks.org is speculating, and their estimates are close to 100 million sharks a year are being wiped out of the ocean. An overwhelming number of those are being killed simply for their fins. Now, because Asian cultures feel that shark fin soup has social significance. And so in order to impress friends who are living today, they're jeopardizing the future of the children that are going to be coming along. And so consequently, there needs to be a change in the psychological approach to this. There is no magic in shark fins. There is nothing more than a cultural significance, and that just needs to change. And many of the younger Asian population whose parents think that it's cool to have shark fin soup at a wedding because it makes them look successful, the younger generations are recognizing what is happening. And so there is a slow change. Hopefully it won't come too late. But that's one of the topics. Also, we talk a lot about, in a talk with guests, about the decimation of the sea turtle population. The fact that the sea turtles are in the process of being unable to continue. There's a bunch of, there are several websites that are concerned about that, where you can find out more information. You can certainly check out saveourleatherbacks.org, saveourleatherbacks.org. That is a website that Larry McKenna is putting up to talk about the issues that are going on right now in the ocean with the specific leatherback turtles. That's the population that he's following. I'm an online marketing consultant. I have a tourism background with PR and marketing as an emphasis, so I've found the Blog Talk Radio platform to be quite useful. Since February of 2008, I've produced more than 800 shows on Blog Talk Radio and nearly as many videos. I've produced nearly as many videos on YouTube and other video sharing platforms such as Vidler, Rever, and Dailymotion. I'm sure you're not the first person, I'm not the first person to tell you that placing video on your website is an effective way to get your website indexed. Video, combined with Blog Talk Radio, as part of an aggressive social media philosophy, is even more effective. Whether your niche is internet marketing or one that is very localized, online marketing is essential. People search for information now via Google, Bing, and Yahoo, as well as dozens of other search engines. The likelihood of someone finding your website when they search for your particular keywords diminishes as the page number increases. Now, this is Ken English, and I'll be right back in just a minute, and we'll be talking with a couple of different people about what is going on in the underwater world as well as online. Welcome to Liquid Lounge. I'm Ken English, and I'm in Miami, Florida. I'm joined by Peter Symes, who's in Copenhagen, Denmark. Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine over here. Thank you for inviting me back on the show.
Well, it's a beautiful, warm, and sunny day here in Miami. You want to go out on the beach with me? Peter, are you there? Peter's calling in on Skype, and it looks like we got a little delay in the phone system. So as soon as he pops back into the call, we'll pick up our conversation.
Yeah, hi, Ken. Peter? I'm right back here. I had a little interruption here. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. I know how that works out. But we were just about to go out on the beach. Are you ready to go for a walk?
That sounds lovely.
Well, we can go alongside the shore and look at the ocean. As many people do here in Miami, it is spring break here in the state of Florida, and certainly in the United States. And a lot of people are in coastal areas. Some are in Cancun. The Caribbean's popular. I guess, middle part of the day, they're starting to wake up from partying all night. But they look out at the ocean. They swim around. They snorkel. But they really don't understand that there's some very serious problems taking place under the surface of the ocean. That's something that you follow with X-Ray Magazine, don't you?
Oh, yes, all the time. For us who deal with the ocean and scuba divers or snorkelers or swimmers or just enjoy sort of a romantic stroll along the beach side in the late afternoon, the matters with the ocean should be of concern to us all. And I don't think that anyone who watches the news nowadays can be unaffected on the bad tidings.
Well, there's just so many problems. It's a wonderful environment, but we're just wiping out species after species, or we're pushing them to the edge, let's put it that way. Sharks, turtles, dolphin, a tuna, sea bass, many species that I don't even know about. I have to admit that, over the years, I eat seafood, never really thought about what was happening and sustainability to it. Sharks, I guess, are the species that's really started to get me being aware of it, and shark finning in particular, just such a terrible thing for no purpose. To cut the fins off a shark because you want to have them as part of soup?
No, it does not make sense at all, because there's no nutritional value in shark fins whatsoever. It's just cartilage, just like your earlobe is. And furthermore, it has turned out that it is in the fin that a lot of the environmental poisons and toxins get accumulated. So a lot of the shark fin products are actually toxic and unfit for human consumption. But traditionally, it's very powerful, and it is, especially in Asia, there's a high demand for shark fins, for shark fin soup, as you say, which is, I believe, a traditional course at weddings.
Well, my understanding of that is it's a status symbol, much more than anything else. Isn't that true?
I'm not an Asian, so I can't really say, but as far as what I can gather from what I have looked into, it is a matter of status when you throw these big dinners. But there's no need to continue doing so, because most of the world, including Asia, is enlightened. And I think most of us can appreciate that if we don't take better care of our natural resources, we are eroding the foundation for economy and the human societies as well. But it's funny that you should mention the sharks, because in the short, relatively short time span that's gone for, say, when the Jaws movies came out, what was that, late 1970s, the appreciation of sharks had changed tremendously, to the point where there's actually a TV commercial over here doing a pun on the old now famous scene where from the Jaws movie, where the shark sort of eats this fisherman's boat from behind and divorces the fisherman. But now the roles are reversed. That is a man that crawls out of the ocean and attacks the sharks. And you see shark tours going on now all over the world, where people insist on being in the water with big tiger sharks, hammerheads, and the latest craze is swimming in open water with great white sharks. And it was only a couple of weeks ago one of my contributing photographers sent me a YouTube video, which I've uploaded to our site, by the way, where he's photographing a huge tiger shark, and the tiger shark decides to take a bite of his camera. It's part of its natural sort of scavenging behavior. But instead of this human just being terrified, panicking, in trying to flee this shark. The photographer fights back and tracks the shark over the nose, and they have like a tug of war of a camera, a diver, and a shark like 4 or 5 times his size. And then I want to go to show that our understanding and appreciation of a shark has almost turned around 180 degrees, that we're gone from just fearing them and loathing them to almost disrespecting them in a way that ultimately could prove dangerous to someone.
Well, I mean, isn't that part of it's like when we take wild animals from Africa and, you know, put them into circuses and things like that, and think we can domesticate and change perceptions. I mean, we can't change nature. You know, there is a balance, and it's a very delicate balance that most people don't understand. If you take the top predator, sharks, out of the equation in the ocean, lots of bad things are going to happen. You know, there's going to be an overabundance of some things that sharks normally eat. Certainly, it's a problem. But there are a number of organizations. Certainly, there are movies that are being done. The most recent movie, The Cove, focused on some a Japanese slaughter of dolphins for whatever reason that goes on. I know a lot of it's cultural, you know, and I know that there's a lot of things that are difficult to change. But education is really the basis of all of this, isn't it?
That too. Unfortunately, public perception of these matters have changed tremendously, especially in the latter years. As you said in the beginning, doing this kind of magazine and constantly covering ocean matters has also led me to constantly being confronted with rather depressing matters such as, you know, the global warming, the acidification of oceans, the depletion of fish stocks. But I've also seen some encouraging signs, and that is that, for instance, in this country, it seems to have become a little bit of a sport among common people to they replace all their light bulbs with the energy-efficient versions. There is an architectural firm that has now created what's called city windmills, and it's like a little, it looks like a cream with whipper or something that you can mount on top of your house, and it actually provides enough electricity for a little family of three. It costs about $10,000, not a big deal. And there's a huge demand. And the only reason why these things have not been put up to a wider extent until now is that it is actually the city council that is struggling with building codes, because you can't just go about mounting all these windmills on top of all buildings. They need to be structurally sound enough and whatnot. And when I look into the ecological matters, I mean, people are definitely more aware of what kind of produce they can buy in the shops, and they give more money to environmental organizations, and they swap their modes of transport. So from that, and also watching the huge momentum that's behind the windmill and solar panel industry, I know that's not entirely sort of ocean-related, but in matter of very, very few years, well, what are we talking about here, 3, 4, 5 years where global warming, climate change has really been on the agenda, we have seen such a tremendous change in attitudes around, and I find that encouraging. And also with the matter of the sharks, there was a campaign a while ago where the biggest online trading community in Asia called Alibaba was subject for a campaign to prohibit shark products on their website, and it took a lot of campaigning, but they actually also came around, I believe it was like half a year ago or perhaps a year ago, and ultimately banned all shark products from their online forum. So all these campaigns, they do actually matter. So when everything sort of comes together, it is on one side worrisome that that we have the impact on the oceans that we do, but in order for things not to be too depressing, I believe we also need to have a little bit of faith in humanity's ingenuity, and that know, common sense will, after all, prevail over greed.
Well, certainly that is a very hopeful approach, and you know, there are a lot of really interesting projects that are coming out of, you know, the expression out of chaos, or, you know, in adversity comes opportunity and things like that. In Amsterdam, there's a company that's I've just found out about, that's using old shipping containers and new shipping containers to create housing. I found out about that because a friend of mine is in the container business, and he's now made a proposal and put up a website called EcoHutHomes.com. And his proposal, you know, he's in a contest or a competition for new environmental ideas here in the Miami area, but his is to convert some of these shipping containers. You can run wiring, electrical into them, you cut some holes for ventilation, you can insulate. And what you've got with a box, a shipping container of 20 or 40 feet, is you've got rooms ready-made if you can do a little bit of work with them. And he sent me a link to a company in Amsterdam that's been doing this for a number of years for college dormitories and other low-cost housing. And it seems so such a, like, a logical idea, because there's millions of these containers sitting, rusting around the world that could be cleaned up. And particularly his motivation was the earthquake in Haiti. It's going to take a long time to build any kind of shelter down there, but it wouldn't take nearly as long to retrofit some of these containers and create some, you know, essentially box houses, you know, that would withstand earthquakes because they're solid steel. So there are some good ideas being advanced.
I think it's an excellent case in point, because there seem to, across the board, and not just in ocean-specific matters, be changed appreciation of how we relate with our environment in general, not just the blue realm, and as everything is interlinked anyway on this planet. I think it's a good way to go.
Now, there's a number of topics that you follow in your publication. If people were interested, it's xray-mag.com. And I happen to see the newest picture that you got there is in England. They have sunk a former airplane as a dive site. In these unusual structures, they won't last very long. We had an airplane in the Miami area that didn't make it too long because of the storms and the power of the ocean. But in the few years that it was down, it was just a really attractive dive site. You know, they clean it up, and you've got an aluminum fuselage that divers can go into, and you put it on a barren spot, just like, you know, digress a little bit, but over in Mexico, Jason Taylor is building for the Mexican government a very unique underwater attraction. It is going to be the largest artificial reef of man-made structures in the world. He's got all sorts of statues, and he started that in Grenada. So you've been following that, haven't you?
Yes, we have. We have been following Jason since his career really, really took off. But it's an interesting point you make, because not only will the creation of artificial reefs, such as the airplane that you mentioned, and artworks such as Jason, create a substrate for life. When you have a barren seabed just consisting of sand, it is very hard for corals to grow. They need a fixed substrate like rocks or stones to grow on, or a ship. And in that manner, you also create a habitat. Okay, no matter how many artificial reefs that we put down there, we can never really sort of compete with the area that nature has provided, but it is my hope that by doing so and putting down more artificial reefs, that we will both gain an understanding and an appreciation of what it takes. Instead of we are having our little gardens in the suburbs, maybe divers can one day have their own little coral garden that they were tending to.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting thought pattern there. We in the Miami area have the world's the world's only artificial reef that is also a placement facility for cremated remains. It's called the originally it was called the Atlantis Reef, and now it's Neptune Reef. And the Neptune Society in the United States is a an organization that cremates people when they die and takes their ashes out to sea. And in the past, in the traditional, as much as cremation is traditional, people would just get on a boat and they would scatter their ashes. And it would usually be a person who loved to fish, somebody that was in the Navy, maybe a surfer, somebody whose life was focused on the ocean. In the people who were burying that person after they died knew that they wouldn't want to be placed in the ground, that they would really want to spend eternity in the ocean. Well, a friend of mine, Gary Levine, took that idea a little bit further and took the concrete memorial concept and built an underwater attraction and obtained approvals from the state of Florida, and it was the first time that this was done, but to place there's restrictions and all sorts of stuff. He had to fight his way through the system. But off the coast of Key Biscayne near Miami, about 5 miles out, there is a facility that you can actually have your cremated remains placed into a large statue surrounded by bronze lions and domes and lentils and all sorts of art. They were creating a mythological environment like Atlantis. But it can be done. It's difficult to do because of regulations and bureaucracy, but the creation of attractions underwater takes pressure off the natural reefs. And this Neptune project in particular was placed in a very barren stretch of sand. There was no fish. There was nothing there. And now it's documented that there are schools of fish swimming around it, that there is marine life, and coral is growing on these concrete structures that are put down. So it can be a system if there's an enlightened government, because it all takes the approvals and things. But one of the things I wanted to do today is Roz Lund had sent me some interviews that she did at the London Dive Show. And I've got one that's prepared, her interview with Jim Standing of Fourth Element. You know Jim, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Jim and his partner Paul has a very interesting manufacturing plant, or his headquarters in southwest England in Cornwall, and they specialize in dive apparel and various wetsuits, and have come up with some pretty innovative stuff. And he's one of the industry renewers and innovators, if I must say so. So whatever Jim has to say, it's probably going to be worthwhile listening to.
Well, before we play that, and I'd like you to listen to it as well, because this is pretty much a test of her doing the interview, sending me the file, then I'm downloading the file, do a little editing, and then putting it up on Blog Talk. You know, it'd be good to get your impressions of quality and things like that. It's only 5 minutes long. But before we do that, London Dive Show is one of many that take place around the globe. You follow a lot of it through the publications, some you can attend, but dive shows are really important for the industry, aren't they?
There sure is, because it is a venue where the industry can display or showcase its product towards a wider public, and it does. In as far as some of these shows also provide entertainment and speakers also expose their audience to the adventures. That is a thing I think in particular the UK dive shows are very good at. They usually have like a stellar range of very, very big names divers who's gone down in submarines on Titanic and Antarctic explorers and free divers. And I mean, at some of the UK dive show, I'm listening to Jean-Michel Cousteau and Tanya Street, the former female free diving champion. A lot of the tech divers who find and explore historic shipwrecks. So they usually book big conference halls or cinemas, and these shows are just packed to the brim with people sort of standing in the sideways. And
let me play the little clip. You can stay with me for a few minutes, can't you?
I can.
Okay, so this is Rosalind from London talking with Jim Standing of Fourth Element at the conclusion or at some point during the recently concluded London Dive Show. This is Ken English. You're listening to Liquid Lounge with Ken English and Peter Symes today, and we'll be right back after this clip. So here it goes.
There's been a British company that has come out of nowhere and is now one of the very serious players, not only in the UK, but internationally. They've completely revolutionised thermal underwear, and they're now looking at other kinds of protection. And I'm with Jim Standing from Fourth Element. Now, Jim, you've got dive boots on your stand. Now, this is a very old product. Come on, let's face it. I mean, how can you put a new spin on an old product like a dive boot?
Well, the best way to answer that is to say, look at what happens when you go out and you're buying footwear for any other sport. You go out and you look for things that are going to give performance and comfort. We try to take the same approach to designing a dive boot that recognizes the fact that diving is a sport, and just because you're putting it on your feet and your feet are going into fins doesn't mean you don't need performance. It doesn't mean that you don't need comfort. So why settle for essentially a neoprene sock with a bit of rubber molded onto the bottom of it? So we looked at it from the point of view that if you were a sportsman looking to select pair of shoes, you would be looking for criteria like heel support, cushioning, arch support, and hopefully that part of the product offering additional performance to what you're wearing, which is exactly what we've done with our boot. We've designed a nice boot with interesting features that nobody else has on their boots, such as cutaway for the Achilles tendon so that it's more comfortable to spin with. But inside the boot we have an ergonomic footbed which has heel support, arch support, a heel strike pad, cushioning throughout the length of the foot, which makes the boot much more comfortable whilst walking. It makes it warmer and it also makes it fit the foot better. Consequently, we have a product that has taken comfort to a different level in terms of you put the boot on and you feel as if you are wearing a shoe designed for sport rather than you feel like you're wearing a shoe that you do the sport in.
The ergonomic foot plate, I think it's removable, isn't it? Now, what's the thinking behind that?
Well, there's two thoughts behind it. The first being that some dive schools will use it as rental, and if they do that, there is a risk that somebody has a fungal infection in their foot, and they could cross-contaminate other users of the boot if somebody else comes and rents it after them. You could take these footbeds out, rinse them in some disinfectant, dry them, put them back in, and eliminate that risk of cross-contamination. But from the individual user's point of view, the simplest thing is it makes the boot easier to dry. After a holiday, after you've been away on vacation, you come back, you'd be able to take the insole out, give it a rinse, no stinky boots to worry about anymore. That also will help. You'll then be able to get the boot properly dry before you're storing it before your next trip.
I'm really quite interested now. I quite fancy a pair. Can I get a pair from you today? Are they available yet? Or are these just postcards that you're teasing us with? And we have to wait for a few months before we can get our picky mix on them.
Well, you don't have to wait that long. They're available at the end of April. This is just our first production run. And the rest of it will arrive at the end of the month. And it will be in stores by the end of April. And in the States, it will be in stores by the beginning of May.
And also, because Fourth Element is not only Britain and the States, you've got Fourth Element New Zealand, I think, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So when's it going to hit down under?
I know, probably about a month later than that. And we have distributors in Scandinavia and the rest of Europe as well, and gradually we'll be getting the product out there over the next 2 to 3 months. It should be in most good desktops.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So if you're looking for further information on these boots, have they got a special name for you?
Well, yes, there's two boots. The Pelagic is the lighter weight boot, and the Amphibian is the heavier weight boot, designed more with the shore diver in mind. The heavier weight outsole, with a slightly enhanced grip, designed for the people who definitely are going to be clambering over rocks.
So it makes the other rocks a lot easier, like Chisel Beach and things like that.
Absolutely.
A lot kinder.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. And it's available on your website, is it?
It is, yeah, which is fourthelement.com.
Thank you very much, Tim. That's Ross reporting from London International Dive Show here at Docklands in Excel.
Welcome to Liquid Lounge. You are listening to an interview done by Roz Lund at the London Dive Show, the recently concluded Dive Show. Peter, you and I were communicating a little bit. The background noise, if you will, it creates a certain amount of excitement because it's there. Did you have difficulty understanding it?
I think the technical quality of these recordings can be improved a little bit. I did have a little difficulties separating out the conversation from the background noise at times. But you're right, it sort of gives sort of that airport, central station, ambience of busy energy.
Well, since this is part of a test, we really wanted to look at that. Now, Roz, I think you have joined us on this conversation.
Yes, I have. Hello, boys.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi, Rose.
I'm doing fine. How are you guys?
We're doing very fine. Now, were you able to listen to some of your interview there?
I'm very sorry. Unfortunately, my mobile phone rang and I had to take a call just so
No problem. Basically, what we were trying to get into, because this is the first one that we've done, and this is really, it's a test to see how these things sound and everything. Describe the environment when you talked to Jim Standing. Was it in the middle of the show, at the end? Were you at his booth? Peter and I were discussing the background noise as opposed to the interview. And we're just trying to assess what did you use to record it?
I was stood on Jim's stand. I walked past Jim's stand. I've been noticing these boots for some time, and I was really curious because a diving boot is a diving boot, surely. So I've got a small voice recorder made by Olympus. It's a digital voice recorder, and I just asked Jim if I could have a quick conversation and record it for Blog Talk Radio. And Jim said yes, and we stood on his stand. He showed me the boot, and we talked. And yes, you get the atmosphere of a show behind you, which actually, having not heard the interview, I think it's quite exciting rather than a clinical studio interview sometimes, because you get the excitement of a dive show.
Well, I certainly agree with that. In part of it, when you can listen to it after we're done today, this show will be available in probably about 45 minutes or so as an archive, and then you'll be able to listen to it exactly as it came across and evaluate it. And it might be the distance that you hold the microphone from Jim's mouth when he talks. If it's very close, then he's going to be louder. If it's a few inches further away, it's going to start to pick up the ambient sound. So, just as you listen to it, you'll remember how you worked and everything. But I thought it was very good. And I think that the uniqueness of being at the event, it sounded like it was a very busy dive show, was it?
It was reasonably busy. The London Dive Show is held in the spring. There's two kind of major dive shows in the UK. One in the spring, which is London, and one in the autumn, which is Birmingham. And London tends to be more travel-focused. And there's a lot of travel destinations that come to it, whereas Birmingham is more manufacturer-focused and more distributor-focused. So you get more equipment at Birmingham and more travel at London.
Now, Peter, you've been working with Roz over on a couple different projects. Maybe you could touch on them and ask her a couple questions that you think would be relevant.
I think this platform is going to be quite interesting because while podcasts and internet radio and radio, of course, has been around for a while, this will probably be the first time anyone in the diving industry is going to use it in any sort of extensive manner that as we do. And just as this conversation is a testament to, I mean, you can located in Miami, I am in Copenhagen, Ross is in the United Kingdom. We are now able to tie in a studio that's spread over three countries and also tie in contacts, local reporters, contributors from pretty much all over the planet. And I believe this is going to be quite exciting, at least as a supplement to all the other media streams and activities that we currently produce.
Well, Roz, you're involved in a number of venues and shows, and maybe you take a minute to just introduce yourself. I mean, it's not that you're new to the dive industry. Give me a little of your background.
I'm a professional instructor. I trained with both Paddy and BSAC, so I'm a hybrid. I've taught in Britain. I've taught abroad, which is fantastic. Having the opportunity to, at 8 o'clock on Monday mornings, thinking about other people commuting through Bank Station, and I'm taking a boat out diving in Ras Mohammed and looking at hammerheads. Used to make me smile. I write for some of the magazines, and I work doing PR for a number of companies. And I also co-organize Eurotech, which is a technical diving conference.
Well, maybe you could talk a little bit about Eurotech. That's the first that I had seen it, you know, recently when we were communicating. What's the purpose of it? It's every other year. 2008 was the first one. What do you try to accomplish with it?
Basically, it's got three elements. It's got an exhibition, and it's relevant, pertinent exhibitors. So we are talking to technical diving centres throughout the world to come and exhibit. We've got, I think, four different rebreather manufacturers. We've got KISS, we've got Ambient Pressure Diving, we've got Revo, and I'm talking to another one at the moment to come. We've got specialist thermal underwear, specialist dry suits, proper lighting systems. I'm talking to a deep camera company. So this is equipment for the advance and tech, so the stuff that goes beyond, you know, 80 meters, 100 meters, so 300 foot. Now, not everybody can manufacture for divers that operate in such extreme conditions. So there's that. Plus, we've got a range of speakers, and they're talking on high levels. So they're talking to the highly educated, experienced diver. There's nothing wrong with talks aimed at, a recreational diver at all. But there hasn't really been much for the more experienced diver that goes off and does expeditions like diving the Carpathia or diving the Britannic or the Victoria. Or pushing the cave systems in France. So we've got the guys that are doing those kind of dives talking. And then all other divers like talking about diving and socialising and drinking beer, don't they? So on a Saturday night, we have a very posh dinner. Everybody's dressed in dinner jackets and ball gowns. And we have an award ceremony and a proper sit-down dinner. And it's a great, great social event, and it's basically all mates together. So that's what Eurotech's about, and it happens is.
Now, you've had, 2008, you put on the event. In 2009, one of the event organizers passed away. Would you tell me a little bit about Carl Spencer and what happened?
Carl Spencer was a plumber from Dudley. Carl was lovely. He's a very down-to-earth man who did air conditioning for a living and was incredibly successful at it. And it gave him the resources to be able to go out and do some pretty major diving. In 2003, he led an expedition to dive the Britannic, and I was on it, and so was Lee Bishop, and so were several other people. It was filmed by National Geographic, and Carl's expedition was special because he had Bill Smith come along, and they found evidence of the minefield. Because before Carl's expedition, nobody understood why Britannic, they didn't know whether she'd been hit by a torpedo or a mine. They knew it was one or the other, but they didn't know which. And Carl's expedition found evidence of a German minefield, and, you know, mine cradles, and there were a couple of mines actually still there. So that was terribly exciting. And he went on to do some more extreme work with diving up in Narvik, I believe. Now he and Lee Bishop would go down to Austek to speak at Austek, which is kind of the equivalent of Eurotech, but in Australia. And that also happens every 2 years, and next year it's happening. And they came back all enthused about wanting to run a dive show, tech show. And I also wanted to do something, because I remember Kevin Gurr running conferences in the late 90s for INATD in Coventry. And we kind of came together and we organised this. But Carl was out on an expedition on Britannic, again, filming for National Geographic. And unfortunately, there was an accident. I don't know what went wrong, and so I'm not prepared to speculate because that is unfair on his friends and his family. But it was tragic, unfortunately, and Carl died. And he's been sorely missed by very many people.
The plan is pretty much to dedicate this upcoming show to his memory. Isn't that part of your thinking process?
Yes, it is. The nice thing is that the Eurotech logo, you look at it and you see the diver with the scooter, and that is Carl, because our graphic designer took a photo of Carl and has changed, made it into the logo. So when we look at the logo, we know, hey, that's Carl. So that's kind of cool.
Well, certainly, it's a tragic accident that takes place, but the spirit lingers on, and I know in reading some things off the website, there was concern whether you should continue the show and everything, but an adventurer like Carl would certainly want you to continue, don't you think?
Yes, it was just it was a huge shock for everybody, and we weren't sure what we would do. And Carl was basically the bank last time, and with no bank, and a big shock, we didn't think we could go ahead. But luckily, Mark Dixon, who is also a technical diver, has come in, and it's meant that the show can go on, which is hugely exciting because all the delegates who came last time are really getting quite worked up about coming this time. So it's going to be a really successful, popular event, and a truly fitting tribute to Carl.
Well, that's wonderful. Peter, do you think it's something you're going to be able to get over to and attend?
Yes, absolutely. It sits at a good time of the year, but it also made me reflect on another matter that, unfortunately, many of us who have been in the dive industry for quite a while in some kind of professional capacity has learnt that diving sometimes that we lose friends. I lost a couple of dear friends on that account too, and I think we must always remember that diving, when we dive, we are out of our true element in another realm. But it also allows us, and that's the magic about the whole thing, to be adventurous. Unlike having to sort of trek to the poles or go across Sahara, deep into the African jungle like Stanley did, and Livingstone did in the last century. Diving permits every one of us to be an explorer and an adventurer to some degree. I mean, even in our local waters here off Scandinavia, I'm sure the same is the case in the United Kingdom and in Florida. You can just wade off any beach, and if you're lucky, you can stumble across something like remains or an old wreck from times past, which are like a time capsule, and you can find stuff, discover stuff that's impossible on land. You can have interactions with alien creatures in the water, and you may even discover something new. But there's sort of another side of the coin, and even though diving has been made very, very safe through training practices and stuff, when we do push the envelope, there is still a big risk that somebody might get injured or even die. And us losing friends here and there is a sad testament to the fact that it is not entirely risk-free.
Well, nothing is entirely risk-free, and certainly going underwater, even snorkeling, there's an element of risk to it. The deeper you go, the more the risk that's there. Roz, we're winding down this show. It's an hour, and you know, we got about 10 minutes to go. On the note of Eurotech, for somebody listens in the near future, how would they get more information? You know, in what is going to be forthcoming? I mean, the event is in October, so you're still planning some of it, I imagine.
Yes, we are definitely still planning it. I've just about got all the we're going to be open up the tickets sales for Eurotech shortly. But if they want to find out more, it's dead easy. You just go onto the website, which is eurotech.uk.com. Or if you can't remember that, just type into Google Eurotech plus diving, and it will bring out all the information about the diving conference. It's happening on the 16th and 17th of October. It will be held at the International Convention Centre, which is in Broad Street in Birmingham. So very easy to get to, and it's held at a beautiful venue, which is truly stunning, and will be a good time for everybody who comes to this. And we have people from all over. Last time we had delegates come from Finland, Holland, Germany, Spain, Italy, Portugal, South Africa, America and Ireland. And I know that we're going to have guys coming from international countries again. I've had an inquiry come through from Greece about how do we get there. So it truly is a mixing bowl of high-end technical divers for all over. So exciting.
Well, as it approaches more, you know, certainly we'll do this conversation again. And you know, and it might even set up that do show specifically for Eurotech with some of your guest speakers calling in. Since you're all three of us are using Skype, it demonstrates that is a viable communication tool. And it really works very nicely. Peter, you've been doing some interviews now with people essentially as conference calls, haven't you?
Yes, pretty much. Straightforward and simple. We just do exactly what we do now and just add people to the conference. And hey, presto, you actually got a radio debate panel going. So the technical bar has certainly become lower over the years.
Well, I've found it to be really amazing that, you know, as you had pointed out early on, here we are in three different countries. And we're actually, I'm in the southern end of the United States in Miami. We're connecting through a computer. You know, that's we don't talk. Generally, you don't talk to people in the service anymore. You call a computer, and that connects us. That's in New York City. So all the three phones are going to New York, and New York is then sending this signal out. And the beauty of it is that it's recorded. And it's archived, and it will be searchable. You know, I'll put Eurotech into some of the keywords, you know, in X-Ray Magazine. And this show, the Blog Talk Radio platform, will start to come back in Google results as well. So all of it just says that it's a great opportunity for us to use the media to, as a friend of mine likes to say, put a little mojo on the media. You know, and we can do some neat things, can't we?
Oh, definitely, absolutely. I get to go to an awful lot of dive shows and meeting so many interesting people, and you just learn so many nuggety bits about diving, and hear stories, learn about new equipment. It just makes the sport much more interesting and exciting.
Yes. And we'll get to talk live to researchers as well. I have some octopus researchers, some shark researchers lined up. I've got some editors and show managers out in Asia lined up. Next week we've got the ADEX, the Asian Dive Expo, going off in Singapore. I just spoke to the chairman, a former chairman of Sabre Tourism, Clement Lee, this morning, and he's interested. Very interested in joining the show to talk about the issues around Borneo and the fabled dive destination of Sibadan. We've got our good colleagues in Russia, Andrei Bizikin and Svetlana Moraskina, who are both the seasoned dive industry professionals and magazine editors. They're going to join us, and the list is pretty much endless. So we're going to tie the world in a completely new, different, and exciting manner from here on.
Well, that sounds really great, and scheduled for April 14th is Dr. Drew Richardson, the CEO of PADI, and several of the staff people to talk about the PADI organization and what they're involved with. So right now he's blocked in for April 14th, and that'll be the focus of that show. We'll be talking to them about PADI and what PADI, the Professional Association of Diving Instructors, what they, you know, kind of a state of the industry from his perspective, because he's certainly in a position to know the goods and the bad things that are going on. So, Araz, a closing thought for you. You got anything in particular you'd like to just close out with?
Just keep safe while you're diving, I guess.
Fair enough. Peter, closing thought from you?
Well, safe diving as well, and for those of our listeners and colleagues out there who celebrate Easter or Passover, here it's a big holiday that actually starts tonight. I will say Happy Easter.
Indeed, and we'll wish everybody the best and encourage them to think about the ocean and the inhabitants of the ocean, and keep a positive attitude, because obviously we as people made the problems. We can probably solve them if we try. We just, like so many things, you just got to recognize that there is an issue that's out there. So this is Ken English. Program is called Liquid Lounge on Blog Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 7, at Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And we can all get together next week again, but if not, certainly in the future. So thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Indeed. Goodbye now. I'm going to sign off. Well, this is Ken English, and you've been listening to Liquid Lounge on blogtalkradio.com. For more information about the programming that I'm involved with, you can check out kenenglish.com, kenenglish.com. And we'll be able to talk more about that next week at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.